Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefrey, and this is episode number 258. Truly appreciate those of you that listen each week. Those of you that like, share, comment, just helps me continue to highlight the great people we have in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically GymAware, for bringing this episode to you for free. I only partner with companies that I believe in, and the products that I believe in, people that I believe in. GymAware is by far gold standard when it comes to velocity-based training. So if you're in the market, reach out to them. If you're not, next time you see them at a conference, just let them know how much you appreciate them being a part of Iron Game Chalk Talk. This week, I'm joined by Derek Woolers. Derek is the owner of Life Performance Enhancement out in California. He works with Bonita High School. Has a few things going on, but man, I appreciate you coming on the show.
Oh man, thanks a lot for having me. I've been wanting to get on here since I heard you kind of go into inception a while back, and I just can't thank you enough for giving me an opportunity, man.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you got a unique journey. You know, you're I think either you're almost done or you're finished now with a master's in theology, and so there's a unique story there. How does somebody that's got a master's in theology get into the strength and conditioning?
Yeah, well, I'm in pursuit of that. I'm not quite finished with that yet, but I am, like you said, going on the path to completing that. But yeah, I have a unique journey in as far as this profession. I got into the profession really young, right out of college. I got into it, and then I became self-employed at 24 years old, and I started Life Performance, and I've just been rolling with that ever since these last about 12, 14 years, really been going at it pretty hard. But I'm an evangelical Christian, and when I gave my life over to the Lord, he kind of began to take it in a different direction than I thought he was originally going to go in. I thought it was going to be 100% just strength and conditioning and helping people with fitness, sport performance, and rehabilitation. And I'm doing that, but in process of doing that, he's using this business as a ministry for people. And so it's great to be a part of that. And part of that ministry as from an individual position is me, being guided into graduate school for theology. And I think it's fantastic because a lot of what you deal with in the industry, with whether you're dealing with athletes from ages 9 to, 21, 22 years old, or you're dealing with fitness clients, whether they're a teacher or, a CEO of a big company, is ultimately trying to get to the root of the problem that is inhibiting their performance, whether it is in fitness or it is in sports performance. And a lot of times that is not always physical. And that is where the master's degree in pursuit of theology is coming in great, because you learn a lot of things about how to counsel people. You learn a lot about psychology, about the mind, about how God created mankind. And in doing that, I've been able to, assist people outside of just their physicality, but with spirituality and mentality as well.
Yeah, I absolutely want to dig into that. I think it's really cool. I mean, obviously I'm a Christian as well, and I talk about my faith quite often, but whether or not you're faith-based strength coach or not, there's lots of things to dig into that. But before we do, I mean, when you own a business at 24 years old, you're going to make lots of mistakes. What's one of the biggest mistakes that you've made and how you learn from it?
Oh man. Probably investing money in areas where I thought that it was a for sure, great fit. And obviously turns out that it wasn't, I mean, if I could give advice to any young entrepreneur out there, especially strength coaches who are really go-getters and, you believe that you can work your way towards anything. And I think to be candid to an extent, that's true. You can work your way. I mean, I feel like I'm as hard as working guy as the next entrepreneur out there. But I also believe that you're going to need proper counseling. You're going to reach the end of your rope. And when you do that, you need to be humble enough to know that it's time to ask for help. And I think for myself, That's one of the things that I'm learning now as I kind of, as I'm in my mid 30s, is knowing that there is guys who have accomplished way more than I have in business or in the strength field, and just really learning to reach out and to get as much advice as I can, and really seek out where they were at when they were at this point in my journey, which is having your own private training facility and training clients. That's where I'm at now, is how do they progress beyond that? If you're someone like myself who desires to progress beyond that, how did they go about doing that? Because I think you have to hit business people, business advice. You got to find a raw entrepreneur like yourself, a guy who started maybe a big company from nothing, which is very similar to myself, and he's made it all the way. And then I also think you need to focus on academia, and you need to find a resource in academia, someone who's maybe not like a true entrepreneur, but their mind and is just full of so much business knowledge that they can guide and direct you another way. So, you know, being the best advice I think I could give somebody right now would be to really seek counsel before making financial investments on those three fronts, as opposed to just maybe going with your gut. As entrepreneurs, I think it's real easy to go with our gut because you have a lot of success with that when you're younger. But as you get, my feeling, as you get longer in business, I think the more counseling that you need, because the decisions and the weight of those decisions become only greater.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Yeah, passion. I mean, passion is it's one of the things that makes us all great coaches, I think, is having a passion for what we do. We didn't always go to, you know, when we were studying exercise science in undergrad or grad school, we didn't take the business classes. We didn't take the
yeah.
business classes. We didn't take those types of things when you're running a business or an organization of any sorts, you know. And so that's one of the reasons why I asked that question, what's the biggest mistake? Because I feel like if I can avoid, and this is a question that I always ask from the beginning of my career, if I can avoid the mistakes that others have made and I know what they are, then hopefully I can navigate this a little bit quicker than they did.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest mistakes right now that universities are making with the exercise science majors right now. I just applied for an adjunct position at my alma mater, which is Azusa Pacific University. I wanted to teach in the exercise science over there as an adjunct prof, and I don't have a master's in exercise science. You know, I have all the certifications, the CSCS, I have a multiple master personal training certifications. I have a sports medicine specialist certification. I have 80 continuing educational units in the field of human performance, and I'm pursuing master's in theology, and they still would not allow me to teach in that department. And I asked the chair, Eric, I said, you know, I have all the practical experience that you're going to ever want a student to have. Anything that a student's going to want to do in the industry, I've done that. You know, I've worked in the physical therapy clinics as a specialist. I started my own business. I have my own training facility. All the things that these kids are going to want to do, you know, I've done all that. And they still didn't deem that worthy enough to be an adjunct prof. And I thought that was a little foolish on their decisions. You know, they wanted the master's in exercise science. And although the amount of knowledge that I've accumulated would, you know, suffice for that, in my opinion, they still aren't one. I thought that was a big, you know, not the greatest decision, because those kids are lacking what I lacked, which was business knowledge or somebody to give practical experience, or they could create a class to help the AES major, you know, right, progress in business. Because a lot of them are entrepreneurial minded. You know, the industry is out there and it's pushing the young trainer to go and to own his own gym and to start up his own performance lab or whatever it is that they're doing. That's what the industry is pushing right now. And for the student not to be supplied in that or to have access to someone like that, I thought was foolish.
Yeah, I think, it goes both ways, right? I think, this is a soapbox that I get on often in the show is the people that have the credentials that also have the experience that have that practical application, they need to be contributing more. I mean, sometimes we get so caught up in what we're doing that we don't contribute back to the profession. But, you know, there is something to be said from an academic standpoint for people to be, you know, quote unquote qualified or credentialed
yeah.
to teach. You know, but then there's people like yourself and others that, you know, have this desire to want to give back what they feel like they missed when they were.
Oh, man, that's great, Ron. Yeah.
And I think, you know, we got to find, I mean, we got to actively seek out opportunities to contribute, whether or not you go and you're a speaker at classes or whatever. But then I think also, you know, the people that do have those qualifications, they got to be willing to give back to a profession that's still only 60 years old, you know? And I think that that's, you know, I think if we look at any other profession where it's in its first 100 years, you know, we're chronicling, you know, the first 100 years of this profession. We have an obligation to be a part of it and to help it grow, you know? And so I'm appreciative of, you know, guys like yourself that have the desire and the passion to want to do that. And then it's just a matter, like you said, I think once you have your master's degree, then I think it's a different story there just because it's a checkbox on their part.
But, yeah, right.
You know, but no, it's awesome. You mentioned, you know, we talked about the master's in theology, and I think, you know, what I love, and there's so many times that I've used sermons, I've used, you know, reading the Bible, I've used, you know, my devotional, whatever it might have been, to send a message to my athletes, and not necessarily in a biblical sense, but in a message of like this, you know, basic right and wrong, and you know, and there's so much wisdom, you know, that's being shared by pastors and by the, you know, by the Bible and all those things. But what is one of the things, like, you know, I've always been blown away by the passions that I've had about how good they are as a speaker, you know, and how they're able to get their message, and how, you know, and so my thought has always been, okay, when they go to seminary, when they go to theology school or whatever, they're getting taught how to do that, how to develop a message, how to develop those communication skills and things along those lines.
Right.
What is something that you've been taught in that master's program that you're like, man, that right there, if I applied that to my daily life as a coach, it's going to freaking click, like, you know, like that for my athletes. What is something that's maybe not faith-based? What could they take away from, you know, that type of program?
Oh, man, time management. Time management's key. When I was the strength and conditioning coach at Azusa Pacific University for the baseball program for 5 years, and one of the biggest things that I tried to convey to the kids was to get their life in order. And so I would do a life inventory with certain kids, primarily with the kids who needed to lose weight. We had one kid in particular, Bryce Cutsbeck, getting scouted, you know, leading the nation in home runs, getting scouted, but lacked agility. And we thought that losing some weight would help out with this footwork. So one of my personal projects for him was that I had to get him down about 15, 25 pounds. And so what I chose to do with Bryce was to focus on his life more than just the X's and O's of physiology and calories in, calories out. So I took a life approach with him. And one of the things that I first did with Bryce was I had him take a life inventory. So I had Bryce write down everything. And I do this with all the fitness clients right now. Part of my program that I have at the facility is I have a life performance academy. And so part of it is a nutrient academy. And one of the first things I talk about when I have a little seminar with the nutrient academy is the same thing I talked about with Bryce. I just take that level of working with a collegiate athlete and I kind of tailor it down to working with the fitness community. And so we have this little seminar and I come in and the first thing I ask them is I talk about the foundation, which is the same thing that Jesus talked about when he talked about building it on a rock and not on the sand.
Right.
And so I talk to them about the foundation that they're going to have to use to build everything else upon in their life to achieve this goal. It's all essentially related around goal achievement. And I talk to them about right now about we need to go through and we need to see how sturdy currently your foundation is right now. Because if it's sandy in any way and you're going to try to build something on top of that or practically bring something new into your life, then it's going to crumble right beneath it. So the first thing I have them do is to take a life inventory, and I have them write down everything they do for 3 days from the time they wake up until the time they go to bed. So I have them do 2 weekdays and 1 weekend day. And I ask them to buy an old school, daily planner, and where they have it, where they make certain ones where they're down to the 15th minute. So it'll start your day at 6 a.m. and then it goes 6:15, 6:30, and so on. And I have them be as detailed as possible throughout the day, writing everything down that they do with their time. So they wake up at 6 o'clock, they take a shower at 6:10, they eat breakfast at 6:25. I want them to be that detailed with their day. The reasoning for that is I want everything to be made evident to them as far as as far as this scenario right here. Oftentimes I've found that working with people over the last 14 years is that there's two things that are going on. One, there is what we are actually doing with our time. The other is what we think we are doing with our time. And those are two very different things. And what this does is this makes it evident to them what it is that they are actually doing with their time. And then they can go back through and they'll review that, and that they can compare that with what it is they think they're doing with their time. One second here. I got a good stat.
Yeah.
People often ask me, well, you know, why can I just use my phone? And I'll tell them, no, you can't use your phone. And I'll justify that in a couple of different ways for them. But one of the ways is that I gather some statistical data to back me. And there's one from lifehacker.com, and there's the psychological professor from the Dominican University of California. And he found that people who wrote down their goals, shared them with others, and maintained accountability for their goals were 33% more likely to achieve them. You know, I also give them, if they're interested in biology behind writing's effect on our achievements, stuff like that, that we have a system in our brain called the reticular activating system. It's often referred to as RAS. And Professor Ann Clauser, she said that if you write it down from the book, Write It Down, Make It Happen, that writing down triggers the RAS, which in turn sends a signal to the cerebral cortex to wake up, to pay attention, and to not miss this detail. Once you write down a goal, your brain will be working overtime to see that you get it, and will alert you to the signs and signals that were there all along. So it's that stuff, Ron, right there that I kind of use to motivate them, to justify myself. And the biggest thing I thought was this. If they're going through their day and at 10:30 in the morning, they make a mistake on food, they have to write that down. They have to write their mistake down on paper and actively go through the process of evaluating themselves, marking it down. And again, if it happens again at 2:30, they're going to have to do it again. They're going to have to write down their mistake, and they're not going to like that. Okay. That has proven to be a great eye opener and thus motivator for the client to move them forward in their journey right there. So that life inventory is key. I then take the same approach with their food, and I have them do, they have to do a food inventory. So they have to write down every piece of food they put in their mouth from the time they wake up till the time they go to bed for 2 weekdays and 1 weekend day. And once we do that, then they have to turn all those papers into me. So to go back to where we were talking about earlier, which was the foundation, right, that in essence right there, that life inventory, both of what they're doing with their time and of their food, is gonna be a black and white scenario to them of where they're at with the foundation of their life right now. And it's a life evaluation. And they turn that into me. And then I pray for every client. I'll ask the Lord for wisdom. And I now evaluate this stuff. So I see what these people are doing, and I go through there from a life coaching perspective, and I see where it is that they're doing poor decisions with their time, poor decisions with their food, bad sleep habits, bad eating habits. Okay. And all, because there's always, like I said, it's always going to be more that goes into having a negative effect on a person's ability to progress as a fitness client or an athlete's ability to progress in their weight loss or in their on-field performance. It's far more than just eating the right things at the right time.
Right.
So if they're being open and honest with this life thing with me, then I can go through there and I can see when mistakes are happening and stuff like that, when there is poor time management, I can talk about that with them. I can also then, from a food standpoint, choose how to integrate the food into their lifestyle as opposed to writing out some dietitian designed meal plan that's going to get applauded by a dietitian and it looks great on paper, but it's completely not applicable to their life. So I can integrate foods into their life that are going to meet the lifestyle that they are currently living and coach them to improving some of these lifestyle habits. But we're trying to make this achievable. So to go back to your question, which is, you know, what is, you know, how to go through and all this kind of stuff. I believe that that time management is a great topic for this, because we can go through and we can use time management as a tool to get inside of the person's life. And from there, we can move out and begin to develop that foundation greater.
Yeah, I like that. You talked a little bit about, you know, this Life Performance Academy, you know,
yeah,
with the foundation being the first step. I talk a lot about behavior modification. I think that that's something that, you know, exactly what you're saying, where, you know, it's so much more, you know, you eat an elephant in bites, right? You know, and so take chunks and constantly, you know, and making progress towards a goal.
Yeah.
By making slight behavioral modifications where it doesn't feel like it's this overwhelming deal.
Right.
But when you identify, you've done the life inventory and you identified the issues now. Are you hammering them with freaking 50 things to change, or are you going one at a time, or what's the next step in this Life Performance Academy?
Yeah, right. The integration of what needs to happen. So that's perfect. And what you said was right. You know, I like the analogy about the elephant and taking it one bite at a time. I usually will go through and find out what I believe is the biggest detriment to that individual. And then that is where I'll choose to make a small incremental change. Okay. So let's say I'm dealing with a client and they're open about their faith with me, you know, they're Christian and they're going through and I'm reading their life inventory and stuff like that. And they make no, and they're come in and they're in the consultation that all clients go through. One of the questions that I ask them is, how are you doing emotionally right now? And they'll be like, you know what? I'm stressed out right now. You know, I'm on edge. I don't like my job. I'm having a relationship problem. Okay. Or they'll say, you know what? Things are great right now. And I'm excited to get started, but they're still struggling with this area in their life, right? So they're either lying to me, they're unaware of it to themselves, or they just flat out can't see it. So I got to go through there and I try to figure out the one thing that I believe is going to have the greatest impact first on where I believe they need it. Either is it spiritually, is it mentally, or is it physically? So if I deem, let's say that this person right now, they're having a heart issue. Their self-confidence is low. They just went through let's say they went through like a divorce or something. And so they're emotionally struggling right now with their self-image, their self-worth. And so if I feel that psychologically there's something that needs to be changed, then I'll integrate into there a small life change suggestion that will get them going. And a lot of times it'll be like with a book or with this, like with what you got right here, this podcast thing, something that they can listen to that I know the content of that is going to be uplifting to their morale and to their psyche. And because I know if I can get their psyche in a position, it's just like when you're coaching athletes, you know, I mean, I used to be the pitching coach at the university as well. I did that for 2 years. 3 years I was on field every day coaching the pitching staff. And you know, when you're coaching pitchers, they're half crazy anyways.
Right.
So you have to figure out a way with 11, maybe 13 dudes to figure out how to make each one of these guys tick in their mind. Because right. If their mind's not right, then their performance is going to be filthy. And so I have to make sure that their mind is right, what they're thinking about this thing. And then I have to tell their mind what it is it should be thinking about this thing. You know, like I would get behind the mound during live scrimmages and I would duck down behind them and just go out there during the counts and stuff like that. I would talk to them. What is it that you're thinking? You know, this is what you should be thinking. What pitch are you wanting to throw here? This is the pitch we should be throwing. This is why. Do you understand that? And then they would execute the pitch. You know, it's the same thing when you're coaching fitness clients. There's no difference there. They have a mentality. They're just dealing with life. And when you're coaching athletes, they're dealing with sports.
Yeah.
So I take the same approach with this client and we'll begin with this client, this example client that I gave you, which is we'll start getting their mind right. And when their mind starts getting right and they start coming in and they start making these little changes, then all of a sudden they start coming in, they're a little happier, they're a little more eager for their workout. That means they're going to be more motivated, and then we can start making the nutritional change. When those two things start working together, nutrition and the psychology, the effort's going to increase and the weight loss is going to happen faster. So I take that coaching approach when I work with the clients, and I encourage any other strength coach out there that's listening to this podcast, you know, to apply this stuff to their people right away, man, and start going after it. It's going to work. It's how we were. That's one of the things I'm so thankful for seminary, is when you learn about the cosmos and you learn about the creation of mankind, especially our psyche, it only made me a better coach. It allowed me to go in there and understand kind of how we were created, and then create solutions for problems based on that, not based on what I thought was real beforehand.
Right. Yeah, I talk quite a bit about, you know, you've got an athlete for, you know, at most 2 hours a day, and they've got 22 hours to mess up everything you just did, you know. If you're not involved in those other 22 hours somehow, some way, then you're fighting a losing battle.
Absolutely, yeah. I had to find a way to sneak in there and start getting that area right. And that's when I created this kind of this formulaic method called the Life Performance Academy.
Yeah, I really like, I mean, I think the coaches are listening to this, whether or not you're faith-based or not, you know, spiritual or social, if you want to say social, mental and physical, those are, you know, there's going to be something that's going to be that detriment. You know, there's going to be something that is going to be a pain point or in that development, you know. And if they're not socially or spiritually right, they're not going to get physically right. If they're not mentally right, they're not in the frame to come in and train hard. Maybe it is as simple as physical, which is makes it easy on us because that's what we do on a daily basis. But
yeah.
But you know, getting and pouring into your athletes outside of the walls of the weight room, or at least trying to address those things, is going to give you more opportunities for success in the weight room. And so I agree with that wholeheartedly. When you've had, you know, and I'm glad we're going down this path, because I think it's a great, damn, we were going to talk baseball, but I don't even think we need to do that. I think when you come across this and you have, say, you know, say you identified somebody spiritually is having trouble, they're in a bad relationship, whatever it may be, you've identified it, you've laid, you know, you've laid down a behavior modification or something to try to get them in the right direction, and they have, you know, they have they regress somehow, some way. They have, you know, something happens, they get in a bigger fight with their spouse, they, you know, somebody passes away or something along those lines. How do you go back about, you know, if they've taken a step back, how do you get them back centered and on the right track?
I kind of need to understand that question a little bit better.
So, you know, let's say that you've sat down and mentally they're shot. They're in a bad relationship.
Yeah.
You've identified that as something that maybe they've put on weight because they're in a bad relationship.
Yeah.
And so you've started maybe some form of relationship counseling, some form of like trying to, you know, some method, you've given them some tactic to try to manage that, you know, and it's not working, or it was working and now it's not working.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's coming back and it's affecting your bottom line as a business owner or as a coach, where they're not getting the benefit out of the training because they haven't been able to take the necessary steps.
I got you. Okay. One word, man. One word. Why? That's one word, why. All I would do is ask them questions, okay? And I would say why over and over and over and over again. Because the primary thing is this, is you have to get to the root cause of the problem. And the way that you do that is, God, I wish I could remember where it was in the Bible where it talks about that in there. But it's having to ask. I got some good notes. I did a presentation to a women's group the other day, and I was joking around with them a little bit, right? And I get asked over and over again, you know, people will come into my office and they'll say, Derek, make me skinny, you know, or Derek, make me stronger, make me faster, make my shoulder stop hurting. And I ask why over and over until I've exhausted their reasoning for the desired outcome. And a lot of times they may find that what they come to find and that they desire is something totally different altogether anyways. And I use this one woman, a fictitious woman, as an example. And she said, you know, Derek, I want to lose 15 pounds. And I said, why? And she said, because I'm self-conscious of my appearance. And I said, why? Because I think I'm fat. I said, why do you think that you're fat? Because my stomach shows when I wear certain shirts. And I said, why does it show? Because it sticks out. She says, I said, well, why does that thing stick out there? She goes, because I drink beer. I said, well, why do you drink beer? She said, because I'm depressed. Right? So over and over again, I was able to ask them. And then I asked her, I said, well, why are you depressed? And she said, because I'm overweight. I said, well, why are you overweight? She said, because I drink beer. I said, it sounds like we need to stop drinking so much beer then, man, you know. And I'm joking with them in there right then, goofing around, having fun. But the truth of it was that the root cause of her being overweight was that she was depressed.
Right.
You know, and so that's why that one, just finding the root, it goes like that in business or with especially when you're dealing with athletes and their performance is not improving. You have to find the root cause of the problem. And that's where having functional knowledge of the body comes into play. You know what I'm saying? The FMS and functional movement screens, muscle imbalance testing, really, so that the functionality and the harmony of the body is functioning beautifully like it was created to be. But it's no different when you're dealing with other people as well on the psychological or the mental side of things. You have to know the root cause of their problem. If you don't identify that, then it's like kind of driving a car with a spare tire. You're going to be able to go down that freeway, but you're going to be limited to 55 miles an hour.
Yeah, I think ultimately that's what coaching is. Coaching is finding, you know, where the pain points are and then laying down a plan and helping hold people accountable to that plan and taking them on a journey, you know, and a destination and to reach destination. And I don't think you can have one without the other. I don't think you can be a great strength coach without being somebody that can counsel people in basic behavior modifications. But I love the Life Performance Academy. I really like the concept of that. And taking a life inventory, I think is, you know, I think people are doing these things, but I think anytime you can add to that somehow, some way is good. But now we end the show with some resources here. What's the best piece of coaching advice you ever received?
Attention to detail. Coach Paul Svegas, he's the head coach of the baseball program at Azusa Pacific University. And for myself, I think that was being able to take that to another level than I currently was as a young coach. You know, I was just in my 20s during that time. And, you know, he said, you know, attention to detail is going to be the key, one of the key foundations to your development, Derek. And so I never lost sight of that.
Yeah, I agree. Give us a book, app, and website recommendation.
Book, I'd say Overcoming Gravity. Very much into gymnastics and stuff like that. I think that's a phenomenal book. It allows for years of progression with people, especially the elite clientele, which are rare, but you do need to be, they need to be challenged as well as anybody else. And then, website, I'd say, from a faith-based position, I'd say blueletterbible.com. That's going to allow you to kind of expositionally go through the Bible and understand it word for word. If you ever read in the Bible and you don't understand something, you can go to that website and plug in any word you wanted. It'll explain it to you. I love that. And then from a sports performance standpoint, I would say probably Eric Cressy. You know, he's a great strength coach out there. His website, I think, is cressyperformance.com, I believe. But he has great material, you know. I mean, he's a phenomenal strength coach, so his stuff is good. Mike Reynolds has great stuff also. He's a kind of a performance-based physical therapist out there on the East Coast. He has great stuff. So I think either one of those two would be good, Ron.
Yeah, we've had Eric on the show as well. He's a good friend also, and does a fantastic job. Well, man, like I said, I think, you know, at the onset, anybody that pours into their athletes or their clients and you know, outside of the four walls of the weight room, I think is exactly what we're all meant to do. And the fact that you're going and bettering yourself in that area, you know, you didn't just go keep piling on the science. You went in and you're piling in, you know, stuff that's actually going to make an impact in people's lives on a daily basis is awesome. And so I appreciate you coming on the show, and I appreciate you sharing your story and what you're doing with your clients.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you having me on here. This is great. I'd love to do it again anytime and take that unique approach that I have and just try to deliver as much rich content as your audience base that I can.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.